You are listening to the Innovative OT Podcast, where we firmly believe that role-emerging and role-enhancing areas of practice are the future of occupational therapy. Dr. Sarah Anderson, OTD, is a mental health and pediatric OT, OT educator, and entrepreneur. Listen in on the conversation as Dr. Anderson and other OT innovators share their plans, goals, dreams, and aspirations for the future of the profession. If you're ready for some inspiration, motivation, and encouragement, you're in the right place. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Anderson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Innovative OT. I'm your host, Sarah. I am so excited about today's guest. His name is Jesse, and he is the creator of something called Clinical HQ. Jesse will explain his background a little bit more and why he decided to start Clinical HQ. So we're going to just jump right in. All right. So welcome, Jesse. It's so nice to have you on the podcast this week. Jesse is a really interesting OT because he no longer necessarily works clinically, but has developed an online, not necessarily even an online platform, Jesse. Would you call it an EMR, an electronic medical recording system, or?
No, I would say that though we do things that could be construed as an EMR, it is an online platform. It's cloud-based, and we also have apps as well.
Okay. Before we get into Clinical HQ, Jesse, will you share with our listeners about you, why you chose OT, kind of your career as an OT, and then we can jump into Clinical HQ and you can share all the good stuff that you have there.
Certainly. Well, first, thank you for having me on this podcast. I'm really honored to be here, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to talk to me. How do you prefer to be called? Is Sarah okay?
Call me Sarah.
So sure, I'll jump right into it. So my journey as an OT began like many others. I had an injury, and I became exposed to what the therapy world was. Played soccer for years and years and years and ended up having a bad ACL tear. And so I got exposed to therapy initially, like probably many of your listeners. I thought I wanted to be a PT. And so I went off to school and studied kinesiology at Cal Poly. And the first class I had to take was Kines 101, and they explained a lot of different careers, and I got exposed to OT for the first time. Well, I was assigned a very, very interesting professor as a guidance counselor, and his name was Dr. Clark, and he had this booming deep voice, and he was a very, very interesting guy. And so when I came to talk to him saying that I was torn between PT and OT, he looked at me and he said, "Jesse, you're very unconventional." He's like, "I don't see you really loving the PT environment. I see you more as an OT kind of guy. You like to think creatively, and the idea of following a routine or these structural things that PTs are often bound to, I don't really see you thriving in that environment." And I don't know how he knew me so well so soon, but he was dead on. And so I got exposed to OT, and I really never looked back. I love OT. I absolutely love the way that we look at the world, the way that we imagine things differently. We can think outside the box. We can innovate. I really enjoy that. And so anyway, I love kids, absolutely love children. I had my last fieldwork assignment at Rady Children's Hospital in San Diego, and I loved it, but I came home heavy every single day. I felt very burdened. I saw horrible things. I saw kids in all sorts of states of being messed up, and sometimes even their parents being the ones that messed them up. And that was really hard for me. And so I came home heavy. I had a per diem role at Rady's, and so I had some flexibility, and I wanted to fill my schedule. And so in order to fill my schedule, I also made an attempt to get into home health, even though most of the websites said, you know, we want you to have 2 years experience, this, that, and the other. I'm again not much of a rule follower, so I sent off my application. I said, "Hey, do you guys ever make exceptions for well qualified candidates?" And they said, "Yes, we're always looking for great talent." And so I got that first home health job, and the real interesting thing happened because I was exposed to both. When I would come home from my day at Rady's and inpatient in the hospital, I was heavy, right? I was depleted. I felt like I had no energy. But when I would come home from home health, I was just thrilled. I was pumped up on life. I had so much energy. I had trouble going to sleep. And what I ended up doing after I thought about it for a while is I realized the best you can give a child is what they're already owed, this beautiful life, right? But for many seniors, they have in many cases given up, right? Some of them, they think they'll never get this function back. They think that, you know what, my best days are behind me. And that's really sad for them. And so it's so energizing to be able to show them a different way, to help them recover and see their eyes light up and see them get excited. And lots of them even cry. And so I just got lit up by that. And that really, I was offered full-time with both Rady's and in the home health setting. And I chose home health and I have always loved it. Yeah. So that's
amazing, Jesse. I love the way you explained how working in home health gave you energy, whereas pediatrics really drained you, because I think that's important for other therapists to pay attention to those signs when they're working with different populations. If you feel drained when you go home, it's probably not the right fit for you. And I know so many OTs, I have some friends that have actually talked to me about wanting to completely leave the field just because they feel so drained, but there's so much as an OT that you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the diversity of this profession is part of its appeal. I couldn't agree more with you about if your heart's not in, if you don't feel energized by the work you're doing, just switch. I mean, don't switch careers. I think OT is still a phenomenal career. That would be my suggestion. Stick with it. But perhaps expose yourself to a different setting and just see what really lights your heart on fire and trust your heart there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, okay, you were working in home health.
Yes.
And then what prompted you to want to look into starting something like HQ?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So like many others who start in healthcare, you quickly realize that in most settings, it's sink or swim, right? There's not often a ton of training. They need you to be profitable. These are businesses in most cases, not necessarily nonprofits. And so they've got to throw you in. And so like many others, because I wasn't given perhaps the resources and the support that I desired as a new grad, I sought it out. And so I formed friendships. You know, we all have our work friend who we pull up on speed dial, right? And we ask questions and things. And sometimes those work friends are a different discipline, but they share their knowledge. And so I quickly built this network. But what I really realized was that particularly in the home health setting, we were in this really interesting space where it was kind of cutting edge, right? That home health has existed before Uber, before Lyft, before mobile everything, right? Now we live in the mobile everything world. And yet healthcare is, so it was cutting edge on one front, and then it was so behind in other fronts. Technology really hasn't crept into the healthcare space much, or at least it hadn't. Now it's happening at light speed, I feel like, or at least by healthcare standards, light speed. And so what I saw was the first thing I did was I realized, okay, when I got thrown into the field, that was risky, right? You've got a new grad who you put out in the field and you don't offer them much training or support. And it wasn't the company's fault. I think they did the best they could, but it's expensive. It's hard for them and they don't necessarily know what to do. And the other thing is CMS and Medicare, they're always changing the rules. So it's hard to keep up with it, right? So I realized there needed to be some sort of training. So myself and another colleague, we created something called Hacking Home Health. And at first it was a blog, and then we ended up building the Hacking Home Health Handbook, which was this quick start guide to home health.
Still available, Jesse?
It is still available, but we've actually, I'll kind of continue the story where that's evolved, but it is still available, absolutely. And so we realized almost as soon as we finished it, the challenge there was that because every year this changes, every year we need to update that. So a physical manual is static and we needed to be more dynamic. And so anyway, that colleague and I, we ended up going different directions with our careers. And so I wanted to pursue this thing full hilt. I believed in technology and I had been experimenting with, I'm a bit of a geek, a nerd, if you haven't already gained that. But I wanted to use modern technology to try to streamline something else that was a big pet peeve of mine. And that was in my time in home health, first they issued us a laptop and a cell phone, right? And then not too long after that, it became more cost effective and they switched EMRs. So they gave us a tablet and a phone, right? And then eventually it shifted to just being on a smartphone. And so those documentation or EMR platforms, they didn't evolve with that. They were still stuck back thinking you could type out long sentences and things. And so documentation just got to be an absolute nightmare. And so I started experimenting and trying to create various algorithms and things like this where I could put in simple inputs, right? You know, I could put patient's name, put their date of birth, put things like that, and it would generate a complex output. Okay, so a narrative, if you will, right? It would help me with my evaluations. And so my first prototype that I had built got my eval time, like the best I'd ever done on eval was about 35 minutes, something like that, with all my paperwork, all the charting. And after I built this, I could actually write out the full, a really beautiful narrative using this system in about 7 minutes.
Wow.
So to me, what that translated to was more treatment time. That was the concept, was I don't really want to be doing this paperwork. No one wants to, but we know we need to do it to bill. We know we need to do it to protect ourselves. But I want to spend my time making a difference. And I don't want to be up every night till 11 p.m. documenting. So anyway, at this point, I brought on another partner who was also an OT. His name's Jonathan Mansell. And I had only been an OT probably, 3 years, something like that. I'd risen into management, but I still felt compelled to create something to help others. And I realized that the people that I could make the biggest difference with were other clinicians and helping them help others. And so John and I, we felt the same passion. We started pursuing this. And soon after, we found this amazing tech entrepreneur named Greg Short, who had done something similar to what we were imagining, but he had done it in a totally different industry. He came from the video games and tech industry. So some of his clients were EA, Google, Intel, who were using, he had a training software, and it was what's called an LMS, which is a learning management system. You may be familiar with Blackboard.
Yes. Blackboard and Canvas is what we use Canvas now. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. So that's an LMS. That is a learning management system. It's basically a brain, right? And so what this digital brain allows you to do is to bring in information and then distribute that information. And so we got to working, and so it's been years, but we've built this product called Clinical HQ, and we have a couple of different things that we do, but what we really work with is the compounding asset of information, right? If you go on Google and you search something clinical, you'll find a lot of things, but it won't be necessarily what you need. And oftentimes it won't be available to you in the moment when you need it. And so what Clinical HQ does is it allows you to build your own brain online or in the field, mobile, wherever you might work. And it allows your organization, if you work with a company, the company chooses to use Clinical HQ, well, they can bring everything in there and they can share it across teams. So all OTs can add to the collective OT information set. They can bring in their favorite assessments. They can make these assessments already do the math for them. So for a standardized assessment, you put in your patient values and whatnot, and boom, you press go, and it generates where that person is in their standardized assessment. You know, where are they on the norms? So lots of things like this, but really that's been my journey, is realizing there's so many problems out there that need fixing, and I want to be a part of a technology solution to help clinicians. Oh. So sorry, that was a long answer.
Oh, I love it, Jesse. Now, Clinical HQ, could you, it's mainly adults, right?
Sorry, I'm getting a call. Ignore that. It is not mainly adults, really. Right now, the information we have populated, we populated a few, almost 1,000 resources at this point, custom to all different disciplines, PTs, OTs, nurses, all different disciplines. But I will say the information we've put in is mostly adult or geriatric care stuff.
Okay. Would you consider adding more peds? Cause I know so many, I'm obviously a ped. I'm lifespan in regards to like sensory and mental health, but really have focused on pediatrics. And I know several pediatric home health companies that would love to utilize something like this.
Well, I would be happy to talk with them about that. Because my experience lies more in the adult field, I started with what I knew. But one of the cool things that we've done is we allow individuals and companies to bring in their own resources, right? So they may have their own best practices. Okay, we want you to use this standardized assessment, or we want you to do this or this or this. Yeah. And so they can actually bring that in. It's really simple. It takes like seconds to bring in your own resources, and then you can even share them across your teams, right? So that your battle buddy, right, your work person who you've got on speed dial, you can share resources with each other.
That's amazing. Okay, so I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Okay, so it's it has a platform similar to like Canvas, Blackboard. Mm-hmm. Now, do companies utilize it as well as an electronic medical recording system?
Yeah, so it's meant to almost be a patch. So many of these EMR systems are very static and they're very expensive sometimes to modify, right? Yeah. They'll do a build out with you where you have to design all the assessments you want in there, and then they'll have coding teams build it, but they're static. And we know healthcare is not static. And we also know that different disciplines have different needs, different desires, and it's always changing. So we built our platform to be the opposite of static. It's very agile. It's very nimble. It allows you to customize it. So you could perform an assessment in the field with someone or wherever you're working, copy the data from Clinical HQ and paste it directly into whatever EMR you do.
Oh, that's amazing. So with Clinical HQ could, so I'm working with a home health company right now.
Okay.
And they are wanting me, I'm going to help develop some online learning modules.
Yes.
Could we use Clinical HQ as our host and then upload the online learning modules?
Absolutely.
Because it's so hard because the files are so big that you can't do it through email because I just record all.
It has to be cloud-based. Yep. So that's where the power of the cloud comes in, where you're able to host it through Clinical HQ. We can completely customize it. Yeah.
That's amazing.
We should for sure talk about that. I love your smile. This is great.
This is so cool, Jesse. I just I geek out over stuff like this. Cool. I think people sometimes are so hesitant about technology, but technology enables us to be efficient. Technology enables us to reach more people. And like you said, technology enables us to focus more on treatment and really helping our clients and patients make better progress. I just think what you've done is so innovative and extraordinary.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's been an absolute team effort. My partners and I have, I mean, I can't even tell, I've got some gray hair now and I'm only 30. but it's been a team effort. And I agree with you. I think technology has the capability to really improve people's lives and make a difference. The problem that I'm seeing is that it's often poorly implemented. So I can't blame people who are a little bit hesitant to embrace technology because we've seen it done poorly so often. I don't want to name companies' names, but I've experienced some companies whose technology, it wears the badge of technology, but really it's pretty archaic.
Okay.
And it doesn't necessarily make your life easier. Maybe you're having to push 7 buttons to get one thing done.
Right.
And so we were really, really conscientious from the moment we started designing this, that if we didn't make things easier, then we shouldn't do anything at all. So we really wanted to cut tasks, the time it took to do something in half. So another example here is issuing a handout, right? So many times across settings, you're going to have a home exercise program. You're going to have some information that you need to give your patient, right? Or their family, right? Support information, right? Maybe it's a referral to go somewhere and get this, or I want you to go get this piece of equipment. Well, what we did was we also included an entire database of DME, handouts, etc., right? But right there from the app, you could search for that particular exercise or whatever it is that you wanted to get at, and you could text it directly to your patient. So then on their smartphone, it pulls up that thing. So you didn't have to go search for a printer. You didn't have to have the whole conversation of, do you have an email? Yes, you can also email this resource. But for those, particularly with seniors, this is key. They're not always on email, but a lot of them today, it's hard to find a smartphone that you can buy that isn't actually a smartphone, right? That didn't make sense, but it's hard to find a phone that isn't a smartphone. And so you can text that resource and then they can have it. They're not going to lose that piece of paper and you're going to cut your printing costs down precipitously.
So, amazing. That's
Thank
so
you.
Cool.
Thanks.
So, okay. So with your company, when people purchase Clinical HQ, mm-hmm. It comes with a variety of different resources already built in. And then if they want to add, they can.
Yes. Absolutely. So I keep running into this because we've uploaded so many people think that our intent was to just offer this giant database of resources. We wanted to give a head start, certainly. But our thought process on this is we want you to make it your own. We want you to bring in what's actually useful to you. So bring in your own assets. Again, that compounding asset of information. So as you're a clinician for years and years and years, you're going to discover really cool things. And people are going to share with you really cool things. You're going to beg, borrow, and steal, as I had one professor tell me, to learn all these great things. Bring it in. Bring it all into your specific clinical HQ portal. And then your practice will evolve over time, but you'll get better and better. Your information will be at your fingertips and you'll be able to make a difference.
So amazing. Okay, so one thing I've been thinking about while you're talking, Jesse, is so pediatric home health. So I do some supervision of CODAs in home health and I'm working with another one on how to develop continuing education, but it's not going to cost an arm and a leg for their clinicians. So and one reason I want to say this is for anyone listening who owns a home health company or works for a home health company, one thing I've noticed is sometimes in home health, people don't always use the best assessment tools because it's not accessible to them. So like I was reading an evaluation of a client who's 12 and the therapist used the HELP as their main way of assessing, which is for birth to 3. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? Like, this is not only not an appropriate assessment, but you're looking at skills that obviously the child has, and the child is fairly high functioning, but I think therapists in their minds, they justify it as, I don't have access to a Peabody, or I don't have access to a sensory profile, or so that sites like yours provide that platform for the agencies to help provide, so everyone's using the assessments that they need to be using, and it's a measure, it's a way of quality control as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And on that note, the quality control piece, this is for companies, this isn't for the individual. So we have two products, right? We have the company facing side, which has capabilities that the individual side can't have because of HIPAA, right? So there are certain, we have to segment information and things. But on the company side, we have a testing platform that allows you to push out instantly a test, right? And so no one loves tests, right? But these can be very quick 5-item question. So the 5 most pressing things that your organization is facing, right? For instance, in that example, if someone's using the HELP and we know it's for the age range of 0 to 3, perhaps that individual doesn't know that, right? So maybe you push out a test asking, what are the age ranges that's appropriate for this assessment? 0 to 3, 3 to 6, 7, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then what happens is as soon as you've pushed that out and you can assign those tests, so people in the field in home health, right, on their phones could take that quick little test. As within 24 hours, you're going to get this beautiful report as a manager or an owner of the company. It's going to read according to 5 areas, right? And we can set these areas to anything, but we look at someone's business risk, the business risk. And there's this beautiful printouts, like all the, it's really sexy looking graphs if you're a nerd, right? Okay. But like, so business risk, right? So if someone is doing this mistake out in the field, if they get this item wrong, so every question scored, right? If this person gets this item wrong, are they costing you money? In other words, is that entire episode or claim going to be non-billable because of the mistake they made? And in a large majority of cases, that might be yes. And so that's money on the table that as an owner, you're not getting. You can't bill for those, right? Then we look at their clinical knowledge. Is this item something clinical that they should know that perhaps they don't? We look at the legal risk. Is there going to be a risk of a lawsuit if someone doesn't understand this particular item and they don't? And we look at a couple of other things, right? So I don't want to get into all that and bore you with it. But quality control is a really, really important thing when you're talking about people's health. It's really important.
So. Yes, it is. Oh my gosh, there's so many ways I feel like everyone I know needs to start using this product because another thing I think about is, and I know a colleague and I, we've been chatting a lot about the concept of mentorship. Yes. And how important it is for young clinicians to have mentorship. But your product almost allows a company to provide mentorship, air quotes around that, yeah, without having to have that, you know, face to face as much, because you could provide the mentorship, the information through clinical, yeah, HQ.
Absolutely.
And it can save money, but you could also have people who maybe are experts in certain areas provide the education as a one-time fee where they record, mm-hmm, and then it's accessible to everybody
forever. forever, instantly, on demand. So whenever that person has that 5 minutes to watch that little segment, or whenever, you know, they don't have to come in for a meeting. That's expensive. Having everyone assemble in one place is expensive. First of all, you need the place, you need the space.
Yep.
But secondly, that creates a lot of logistics, right? A lot of people work in home health, particularly pediatric home health. They've got their own kids at home. Right? And so they like that setting because it's flexible. Well, it gets a lot less flexible when someone's telling you, you and the other 45 people you work with have to be at this place from this time to this time. Right? So that's hard. And then if someone misses it because life happens, right? They got a doctor's appointment, whatever. What then? What then? Are you going to bring that other person that did the training back? No, you're not. So real life issues crop up, and you're exactly right. This was meant to address those. Mm-hmm. This was meant for it. Mm-hmm. And I like that you mentioned mentorship. I could not agree more. I think that that is the most beautiful model of learning, right? Apprenticeship used to be a thing, right? Mm-hmm. We had blacksmiths. We had what do they call them? There was a word for that.
Yeah.
People to choose, right?
Uh-huh.
And we had all these different people that had skills. We have skills as therapists, but they're often niche, right? And so you really want to learn and develop from everyone. In fact, that makes me think of, there's this old African proverb. You're going to love this. You're going to totally love this. And it says, whenever an old man dies, a library burns the ground. And that's really, really, if you really sit with that, that's true. You have these clinicians who in some cases, they've been treating, so I do a bit of consulting, and I was talking with Sharp, and they had this therapist who'd been an OT for 41 years. And I just thought, that, you know, me being 30, I'm like, my Lord, the amount of knowledge this woman has in her head, I wish it was that everyone had it. And so I think the cool thing about our technology is it allows for your best and brightest to share their information and essentially mentor everyone at once. Yeah.
Oh, so. I love it, Jesse. I love it. And I'm such a big believer too, that sometimes I think continuing education can get out of hand with cost. Yeah. It granted, there are some courses and there are some certifications, obviously, that cost a lot because, you know, it's time and it's expensive for some of them. But when it comes to learning information where there's no certification involved and it's information people should know, this is a really great way to provide it. And I think it could be a unique offering that a company can do. And then people can really think, when I'm going to spend my continuing education dollars, I'm really going to think about, what do I want to specialize in? And then spend it that way.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I think that's lots of these courses, they're $300, $400, sometimes even $500. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole weekend. They'll give you some tea and crumpets, but is that the best use of your dollar?
Exactly.
Yeah. And so there's someone who I think is really being a adventurous out there. Brandon Smith is a PT who he created his own course and things. And so what we're looking at doing going forward, we've created some of our own content for home health, more on the geriatric side. But what we're looking at doing going forward is partnering with some of these people who've created amazing courses, really, really valuable things, and bringing their content in. So essentially, we would be Netflix in that model where we're offering content, but we're not necessarily producing it, or we're not producing all of it, and people are getting to access it in a really reasonable way, and it's usable. That's the whole thing.
So, it's amazing. Amazing.
Thank you.
Okay. So personal question I got to ask you, what gave you the confidence to go out and do something like this?
That's a really good question. I think that I have a mom, I'm going to credit my mama. I have a mom who's always told me, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained. She would say that back in the day when I was trying to ask some pretty girl out and I was nervous about it, but the pretty girl philosophy applies elsewhere, right? If you don't ask, if you don't take the chance, you'll never, ever, ever accomplish anything you seek out to do. And we get one life, right? So take the chance. Failure is not permanent. I read a ton. So besides my mom, I'd have to credit the books I read and the people who are out there innovating and taking risks. Elon Musk is someone I really admire. So many people have hated on him for a long time, but he looked at the car and he said, you know, I don't think this has to look like every other car. I don't think it has to do what every other car does. I think once I sell a car can keep getting better as time goes on. And that's the power, again, of technology. And I kind of see some parallels between what we're doing, and I know this sounds terrible to say, maybe too much to say, but I think Tesla looks at a car and says the car doesn't have to be static. It can get better over time. We look at information and we say information doesn't have to be static. It can get better over time. It can get more personalized. We can make this asset of information custom to each and every person, just like Tesla does with vehicles. So that's something we're doing right now. And in terms of the price thing, I think that for me, I want something that's usable. Most of all, I want to be able to use it in my day-to-day work life. And we did design this knowing full well that that was our goal. We wanted people to use it, it to change their work life and it to make it easier. And actually a lot of our users are writing back testimonials and telling us, they're saying, you know what, I love this. My boss asked me the other day if I knew how to do dot, 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 and I didn't. But I said I did because I knew I had this, right? So then they came in, they looked up the particular information the boss was asking about, and there was the guide on how to do it, right? There was the instructional, there was the handout. They had all this information. And it's a smart search function. So you'd start typing in, let's say, shoulder, for instance. It's going to bring up things that are like the range of motion pulleys for your shoulder. It's going to pull up handouts on home exercise programs for the shoulder. It's going to pull up a lot of different things. And then you're able to heart those things. So if it's something that you really like, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is a game changer for my day-to-day work life, click the heart, and then it populates in your hub right there, easily accessible. So you don't have to go search for it again. Not that that's hard in Clinical HQ, but it's right there for you so you can make it custom.
Oh, and it's so easy to use, Jesse. I mean, anybody can learn to use this product quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the whole thing. You're preaching the choir.
So you also said that you do some consulting work.
Yes. Yes,
what, do you, what types of things companies do?
Sure. Absolutely. So the company that I have been affiliated with the past 6 years is Mission Healthcare. They're the largest non-hospital affiliated home health and hospice. So they have home health and hospice. They're really a phenomenal company. They hired a new CEO, Paul Verhoeve, who is really an epic individual, incredible. And so for me, though they pay me to consult, I feel like I get the better end of the deal because I'm around people who have been in the industry forever, have so much knowledge. And so my specific skill set, what I do, I'm kind of a weird hybrid. Yes, I'm clinical, I'm an OT, but I also am involved in the business development and sales world. And so I have helped develop clinical programming that sells. So I designed something that both makes a difference in the world and helps patients, but is easily communicated to physicians, to other referral sources, to hospitals, and that they can sink their teeth in and say, you know what, we really would like to refer to you because you do this, right? So for instance, with congestive heart failure, COPD, things like that, some of these conditions are real repeat offenders where you've got people who are in and out of the hospital over and over and over again. So they're a real challenge to these hospitals. And so from a home health company's perspective, if they can design something and they can manage those condition sets well, they can provide better care, keep those people happy, healthy, and at home and not in the hospital, that's a victory.
Mm. Totally agree. Jesse, has anyone ever used your product to collect data for research purposes?
You know what? There is a Dr. Paul Zupkus is affiliated with UCSD, and he has been experimenting with that. So it's novel, it's new, it's something that we are we're piloting at this stage. I would say we're piloting, but we're very open to using.
Has he? So I'm asking you selfishly for personal reason.
Okay.
Do you know if he's gone through the IRB to get approval to utilize Clinical HQ?
I probably shouldn't even be talking about it because it's all new.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
That's okay. So I would just say that not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
Early.
Okay.
Your head's at, and
Maybe we'll chat when we're done because I might have an interest. Right now I'm collecting data in regard to dementia. Processing.
Okay.
I think that's such a awesome potential too, because your system, Clinical HQ, has the ability to gather data in an easy way, in a way that meets HIPAA, but also collects data the exact same way every time. So you're not missing anything.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh.
You got it. What I love about talking to you is you're reminding me about what I think is the best part about the, it's a platform, right? This is a software that's a platform.
Yeah.
When you have a platform, the uses are really infinite so long as you have creative people like yourself who think about, you know what? I know it was designed to do this function, but I can very easily see how I can use these functions.
Mm-hmm.
So keep being innovative.
I'm going to be emailing you all the time, Jesse, because I think there's just so, I mean, it's obviously pediatric home health is where my head goes a lot, but the way it can make a clinician feel so isolated, and oftentimes they get stuck doing the same thing every time, but it's like, it's almost like clinical HQ can act as this virtual community. And it can provide people with the support, the education, the mentorship, all in one.
I couldn't have said it better myself. That was very well said.
So, Jesse, are you comfortable kind of sharing price points of Clinical HQ? You prefer people to email you? Okay.
I'm very comfortable.
Okay.
So we'll talk about the individual side mostly at this point, because I imagine most of your user base is. So if someone is a representative of, if some, one of your listeners is a representative of a company, they're in a leadership position, they should reach out individually.
Okay.
I have
three potential owners of home health companies that may reach out to you.
Certainly. Yeah. So it would depend on a few different things based on their specific needs on that end. But to your individuals listening, you don't have to have your company choose to work with Clinical HQ for you to choose to work with Clinical HQ. We really wanted to offer something, like you said, that offered that community the ability to work together, to use information collaboratively and things like that. We have a product that we call Solo. Aptly named because many times we're out on our own, right? Mm-hmm. And so Solo is the same functionality that we've discussed, but it's at a price point that we feel people can afford. So that is, right now we're charging, and we think this is very reasonable, we're charging $200 a year. But I think that your listeners are a special breed, so I actually created a promotion. And so I created a promotion just for your listeners. And if they, when they sign up, if they put in the promo code INNOVATIVE,
oh, love it.
So again, that's innovative. They can save 50%. So that would make it under $100 for them per year.
That's amazing, Jesse. Thank you so much for doing that.
You're welcome. So what they'll do for where they go is they'll go to clinicalhq.com/membership/apply. And then the promo code, the price is going to reflect $200 until you select the actual product. You'll have to click from the drop-down, select the product, the Solo product, and then put in the words innovative, and you'll see the price immediately change down to $99.50.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much.
What
a wonderful treat. So say with like pediatrics, and they wanted to create more pediatric health content, mm-hmm. who would they communicate with you or like one of your employees, and then they could help input the data, or how does that work?
Absolutely. So we make it so simple. There's a permission base, right? So we can arrange it any particular way. So any individual who's inside a company can bring in their own information, but they can't necessarily, depending on the company's preferences, they can't necessarily share it across the whole company. Maybe they can only share it with their specific discipline. Yeah. But we allow for like almost a super user or super users who can bring in. So a company probably has reservoirs of information that they're keeping on their servers or whatever computers they have. It's a lot of content. So we'll allow them to just bring that content in. It's very simple. It does not take long. But we allow them to bring that in and they can distribute it. So imagine if on your first day as an OT, right, you sign in to Clinical HQ, which it's the same password login as your company's password login for everything else. So it's very simple there. You don't have to remember an extra password. But then your first day as an OT, you had this entire starting kit of information that your company gave you, right? It's all right there. No one had to go print these things. No one had to go produce a binder for you if you're even lucky enough to get that. So you're starting with an ace up your sleeve.
Amazing. Jesse, do you provide mentorship if people are interested at all? Has that
Absolutely.
Been anything you've ever considered?
It's something I have about four or five people right now that are early in their career and they're students I've worked with in the past that are now OTs and they're it is something I'm very engaged in. I think for me personally, I've stood on the shoulders of giants, and that's why I have had the opportunities that I've had. And so I think giving back is absolutely essential. I'm really big on it. So yeah, it's definitely something I would consider.
I could not agree with you more, Jesse. Mentorship is so important. I'm by far the youngest on the faculty team here. And like my boss is the program director who started the OT program at Midwestern. And I work with Dr. Katina Brown, she was a co-developer of the sensory profile and has written the mental health textbooks. I mean, I feel so blessed that I'm just like soaking it all in because... Yeah. You know, they help mold us. Yes. But then when we can take knowledge and then help, you know, new grads be able to kind of find their path. And I think mentorship goes beyond, I want to get more training in feeding or I want to get more training in, you know, whatever it is. It's also about developing your path as a clinician. Who do you want to be? Do you want to be an educator? Do you want to own your own business? Do you want to be a consultant somewhere down the line? And it's like who you want to be in 10 years, you need to be that person today.
Absolutely. I have a story for you. I think stories are fun. Example of where mentorship really made a difference for me. My final internship at Rady Children's Hospital saw some heavy things, right? Very, very heavy things. And I had this sweet, sweet, sweet instructor, clinical instructor, whose name was Calista. I actually had two, and I called them my work moms. They were amazing. Calista, I told her that I told her I was struggling. I was like, I just feel so much emotion in my, you know, I'm overwhelmed by it at times, and I'm finding it difficult to work at times because I just feel like crying. And she said, she pauses me. We stop in the hallway. I remember this distinctly. And she says, "Where are you right now?" And I was like, what do you mean? You see me, right? Like, what do you mean? Where am I? I'm right here. And she's like, "No, where are you in your body?" And it was the weirdest. I was like, what kind of woo-woo stuff is this? And she says, "How do your toes feel right now?" And so immediately I start thinking about, I have no idea. And so I start thinking about it, and then I brought my mind to my toes. I got grounded, as she said. She taught me about getting grounded. She's like, you need to be present right here in this moment, not thinking about these things that you've seen, not thinking about what you might see. Present, be here. How does your body feel? Take a deep breath. So she taught me about these sorts of things. And now I have passed that on. I've shared those same lessons with other people. And then I had another therapist who's a PT. She wasn't even my clinical instructor. And this was at Paradise Valley Hospital in San Diego. And I was frantic because I was so busy all the time. You're just running around constantly. And I brought that into the room sometimes. I brought my like frenetic energy into a room. And she noticed that and said to me, she's like, "Jesse, I see that you're bringing this energy into a room. And sometimes your patients respond and they're a little bit tense because you come in and you're a little bit tense." And she's like, "So what I want you to start doing is be conscious, no matter what's going on in your work life, how many notes you got to do, whatever. I want you to stop. And before you enter the room, bring calm and then come into that room and your patients will respond better." And that was just such solid advice. And she said it very kindly, right? The reality was I was frantic, you know, like many students who was just overwhelmed. I had too much to do. But she gave me that great kind advice and it made a big difference. So you have to absorb all you can, and then you have to give it back out.
Yes. Oh, 100%, yeah. Jesse. Oh, that's amazing. Okay. So what is one piece of advice? Okay, first I want to have this conversation. When it comes to choosing to mentor people, mm-hmm. what do you feel, you know, is a good amount of time or experience in a niche area before you know that you're ready and are capable to start mentoring?
Okay. I would say it depends on the person. So some people are, you know, they're very, very thorough people. They feel like they have to know everything before they feel comfortable doing things. So maybe for them, it might take a couple of years before they're starting. Now, granted, you don't know everything in a couple of years, right, but you've gotten a grasp on certain subjects, right? Because there's so much in OT. So maybe you've mastered a few things by that point. I think as soon as you get comfortable with a topic, it's a good time to begin teaching it. And even if you're not 100% perfect yet, as long as you give that disclosure when you're trying to teach someone something, you say, "Hey, look, you're going to have to do a little bit of research above and beyond what I've told you here today, but this is my understanding of this subject." What often happens is that helps the information congeal and makes it more solid in your own mind, so that you'll learn faster if you're teaching it, because in order to teach it, you've got to have some grasp of it. So it helps you form thoughts.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I agree with you. And I think, you know, for young clinicians out there, or, you know, I think taking on a fieldwork student is always sometimes the best way to do it. And then, I mean, but I see someone like you, Jesse. Jesse, how long have you been practicing as an OT?
I've been an OT for 6 years.
Okay.
I think I'm doing that.
But you are someone who I think has gone above and beyond of where I think some people worked a whole life to get into a position where you're at. You are definitely a very unique person. You're kind of an anomaly where someone who's been out for 6 years and has what you have most surely should be mentoring people. And I think especially I think mentorship in the OT world is now starting to become something people pay for. And I do think it's worth it. But you have to know who you're going to.
Yeah.
And someone like Jesse, who has this experience and has, I think, life experience, but also experience building a company and working with other people, is most certainly worth looking into. If you are a new grad and you are approached by someone who hasn't been out for very long and is still maybe figuring out their own clinical skill set, maybe they're not ready yet for mentorship in regards to, you know, pain or having a business with it. But I do think people who go above and beyond and are thinking outside the box at some point really need to consider their value. Yes. In mentoring young minds, because the OT field, I believe, is going to be changing. And we're going to be having more availability in these non-traditional areas of practice, or, you know,
absolutely,
maybe tech, you know, tech will, you know, be something we're more involved in. And I've gotten approached by so many people in like unique settings, like architects. I'm working with an architecture firm right now in understanding designing and building healthcare facilities in regards to sensory. So whether it's pediatrics or adults, but understanding how humans function in space and process.
How progressive. Oh, they're forward thinking.
So cool.
Love that.
You know, I know some OTs who are contracting out with homeless shelters and providing education in regards to how do we support these individuals in the context of being homeless. Yeah. Dementia. I mean, that's going to be a huge area where OTs are going to be. And I just think we need more people like you doing this kind of mentorship.
I think OTs are game changers. That's right. I couldn't agree more. I think that this this decade will be transformative for OT, because if you look at what's happening in our world today, the speed and the rate at which technology is moving forward, I don't think there's another healthcare discipline better equipped than OT to be involved in transforming healthcare, to be involved in transforming society, to be involved in transforming their communities. And the way we look at the world, particularly from the PEO, right? So the person, environment, occupation, that's a big one for me.
Me too.
Anytime I evaluate the whole world this way. I got to be honest with you. I'm not just, and I want to say something. I do believe in mentorship and I mentor, but I have many people who have poured into me and continue to pour into me. And I think it's so important to surround yourselves with people who are forward thinking. I know your listeners are, they wouldn't be listening to you. Your podcast is extremely forward thinking. And so you have to surround yourself with people who make you better. I've heard it said before that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time around. I think that that's pretty accurate.
Love and
I think
that.
Mastermind groups are really important. I'm involved in entrepreneurial mastermind groups. I've started one. I have both of my partners are mentors to me, Greg Shore and Jonathan Mansell. Jonathan Mansell was my first mentor in OT, actually. So he's been an OT for over 20 years. And it doesn't look it. He's a young guy, right? And I'm really blessed to have people like him and like Greg and like my friends in my entrepreneur group who really – They don't think in terms of themselves. They think we at all times. They play team. You know, they don't play for themselves. They play team. They view the entire community around them as people that they can influence for the better.
Mm.
And I think that's really the best way to be.
I could not agree more, Jesse. Thank you so much for being on this podcast. I hope that you will consider being a guest again in a couple
of years.
I just think you have so much to share, and I think it's important that people know who you are. So
thank you.
Do you want to share your site again if people want to
Absolutely.
Into Clinical HQ?
Certainly. So the website is called clinicalhq.com. It is web-based, so whether you're on a mobile platform, PC, whatever, it's going to work on that. We do also have we have an app on the Google Play Store, and then the Apple Store is coming soon. We're just waiting on approval. So yeah, look us up. When you go to our website, a lot of it's going to be facing more of the enterprise business side. But, if you look at our products, go to Solo. If you're an individual clinician, that's where you're going to want to check that out. Solo is for you.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Jesse.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yes. All right, everyone. That's it for the Innovative OT today. We will see.